Good morning.
Good morning.
So I thought maybe the best way to give a talk on right speech would be just disappear for a while. What we say matters. What we say to each other matters. What we say to ourselves matters. I think we sometimes forget. I have lost most of my hearing, and so communication is often difficult, and I run into problems sometimes with my wife. And our home is about the worst acoustical environment for me that I've experienced. So we work hard on it. And my wife, sometimes she makes a great effort, and I greatly appreciate her effort to make sure she's heard. But sometimes she will really try to enunciate very clearly, and it drives me nuts. And I found out over and over again that there is a huge difference between a somewhat irritated response on my part of, "What?" and, "I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said." A huge difference for my wife, a huge difference for me. A huge difference, I think, for in the ripples we send out to the world with our energy. A huge difference for the universe. What we say and how we say it and what we communicate with that. We are, after all, engaged in the creation of the universe in which we walk and talk. All of it, pigs, flowers, children, rivers, shootings, trees, stars, friends. All of it and the emotional landscape that goes along with it. Is created moment by moment as we walk, sleep, eat, wish, agonize by what we say to ourselves and what we say to others. Our speech, and including especially what we say to ourselves, is the vehicle in which we engage with the universe, with this life in the company of all beings. Our speech is where others know the impact of our love or our hatred. Our anxiety or our calm. And our speech is a wonderful laboratory for us because it's in our speech that we can see, that we can learn something about our own mind. With careful attention to what we say to each other and what we say to ourselves, we can learn to know the kind of energy we are sending into the world, to those around us, and with enough patience, I think, the Buddha taught us, and steady awareness, that energy can shift in the direction of our deepest intentions. The great teacher who is the founder of our Soto Zen lineage, Dogen Zenji, said, "Know that kind speech arises from kind heart, and kind heart from the seed of compassion. Ponder the fact, he continues, that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others. It has the power to turn the destiny of the nation. I've been remembering that a lot in recent weeks in our political discourse. Kind speech has the power to turn the destiny of the nation. The impact of our actions ripples out into the world. It is powerful and it is indelible. And speech is action, virtually constant action. In his first discourse, the Buddha outlined what he had come to see as the path of liberation. It's what he talked about for the 45 years of his teaching, encouraging a way of life that this path represents. And you might remember that Byakaran outlined it ever so clearly a few weeks ago for us, along with the other parts of his teaching. We call it conventionally the Eightfold Noble Path. Right understanding, living with an awareness of the fluid interdependent nature of everything, right intention, fundamental direction for our life, and the third one is right speech. And we'll talk about some of the characteristics that Buddha identified of right speech. Right conduct, what do we do with our time and our life? Right livelihood, right effort, where do we put our strength? Right concentration, which is our meditation, and right mindfulness, the mind we bring to everything we do. The first three components of this path, right view, right understanding, that is, right intention, and of course, right speech, all hinge on language. And these are what make the fourth one, right conduct, possible. A Zen teacher and writer, Norman Fisher, makes the point that when we use language, we think we are talking about something. But in fact, the something that we are talking about is created by our language. This is consistent with what the Buddha said. All experiences are preceded by mind. Have mind as their master, are created by mind. Here's one of the most complete of the Buddha's many characterizations of right speech in the sutras. Such speech as the Tathagata is an epithet for the Buddha, such speech as the Tathagata knows to be untrue incorrect and unbeneficial, and which is also unwelcome and disagreeable to others, such speech the Tathagata does not utter. Such speech as the Tathagata knows to be true and correct, but not beneficial, and which is also unwelcome and disagreeable to others, such speech the Tathagata does not utter. Such speech as the Tathagata knows to be true, correct, and beneficial, but which is unwelcome and disagreeable to others. The Tathagata knows the time to use such speech. So it's true and it's correct. It is beneficial and therefore perhaps needs to be said, but it needs to be said at the right time when it can be heard. Such speech as the Tathagata knows to be untrue, incorrect, and unbeneficial, but which is welcome and agreeable to others. Such speech the Tathagata does not utter. There may be some of that in our political discussions today. At least we don't know that it's true or correct, but it's fun. Such speech as the Tathagata knows to be true and correct, but not beneficial, and which is welcome and agreeable to others. Such speech the Tathagata does not utter. True and correct and welcome to others. Fun to talk about, maybe, but not really beneficial. So why talk about it? Such speech as the Tathagata knows to be true, correct, and beneficial, and which is welcome and agreeable to others, the Tathagata knows the time to use such speech. Why is that? Because the Tathagata has compassion for beings. I sometimes think of compassion and communication or communion, a wonderful word that Katagiri Roshi used. Real communion as communicating from the inside out. That is, communicating from the inner world that we share with the person we may be talking to. Communicating from the place of our suffering. I think that's what we mean by meeting another in the place of suffering, and that is what compassion is. Rather than that knowing by external characteristics, where we spend most of our time. Knowing from a oneness with the other person. Well, to continue with the characteristics, I like Thanissaro Bhikkhu's simple summary statement of right speech in positive terms. Right speech means speaking in ways that are trustworthy, harmonious, comforting, and worth taking to heart. When you make a practice of these positive forms of right speech, he says, your words become a gift to others. In response, other people will start listening more to what you say and will be more likely to respond in kind. There's another simple list that summarizes, known as the gatekeepers of speech. And I find these particularly valuable, a valuable way just to remember. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it beneficial? Is it necessary? And is it the right time? It's that one, is it necessary, that particularly stands out for me. I think an awful lot of agony in our own minds and hearts, a lot of misunderstanding could be eliminated if we just didn't say it, if it's not necessary, if it doesn't really help in some way. And I violate that one, as I violate most of these, many times a day. If it's true and accurate and beneficial, why does the Buddha say he knows the right time? A few weeks ago, a friend of mine gave a Dharma talk here, and it was particularly strong and helpful to me, and I wanted to tell him that. Afterward, I went out to the common area with others, but I had to get to a meeting, so I was in a little bit of a hurry. And I got a chance as I went up there just to say that it was a nice talk. And I felt really crummy afterward. Nice talk did not approach the significance of what he said and its significance to me. I tried to make my comment at the wrong time, at a time when I couldn't really communicate with him. Don't get me wrong, there are certainly times and opportunities where we just say some simple positive comment, and for many that would have been appropriate at that moment. But for my communication with him, it was not the right time. Now, here's an interesting question that came to me. What about Minnesota nice? What is Minnesota nice? It implies, I think, not quite true. Do you think so?
Yeah.
A little bit phony, maybe. At least something that doesn't need to be said. Both Katagiri Roshi, a Japanese Zen master who founded this practice in Minnesota, my original teacher, and Tenchin Roshi, Reb Anderson, who will be doing a session here in 2 or 3 months. Watch for it. Address this point rather strongly. Here's a category on what I think we can say is Minnesota nice. Kind speech is not merely to speak with an ingratiating voice, like a cat purring. If we speak of something with an ingratiating voice, very naturally, consciously or unconsciously, we are trying to get a favor by fawning or flattering. This is not kind speech. Kind speech is not the usual sense of kindness. It can appear in various ways, but whatever kindness appears in our speech, we should remember that it must constantly be based on compassion and deep love. Under all circumstances, that compassion is always giving somebody support or help or a chance to grow. Kindness, he says, is part of compassion. Friendliness is also part of compassion. But as a whole, compassion is rooted more deeply in the human mind. Everyone has this compassion. A few years ago, I spent 3 months in a practice period at Tassajara, Zen Mountain Monastery in California. I guess I was out of the range of Minnesota nice. There were 70 of us in the Zendo for 3 months. I mean in the Zendo and on the grounds. Each day after the Dharma talk, Tenchin Roshi would open it up to the community. And his Dharma talks got shorter and shorter and shorter because he said, you need to talk. And it was a bit of a shock to me because, well, first of all, I had to get up close to him to hear him, and he really liked that idea. So after a while, he had everybody who had something to say come up in front of the whole group and address the group. And there was very honest, full expression. People would get up and talk about what so-and-so said yesterday that I think really hurt so-and-so. Things like that. Not all of it was critical, of course, but some of it was very honest and not easy for people to hear. Not infrequently, the dialogue was tense and uncomfortable. There was a priority given to full expression. This kind of open and honest dialogue is perhaps the best medicine for the self-centered character of so much of my speech. We need to learn to be honest. But Tenchin Roshi makes a clear distinction. The Buddha is clear about avoiding speech that is harmful. But Tenchin Roshi made a clear distinction between speech that is harmful and speech that is hurtful. And there may be indeed speech that hurts that we need to hear. That doesn't mean it is harmful speech. Kind speech, what much of this means to me, is not calculated speech. It doesn't come from my figuring out mind, determining what I need to do to be, or might even be, to be seen as a kind person. It comes, I think, from a much deeper place, a place of intimacy, intimacy with the other before us, intimacy with our day with our own life. It comes from a compassionate heart. If I meet another with a compassionate heart, mind, the other is not a set of characteristics: tall, short, nasty, kind, sloppy, neat. The other that I face really has little to do with the external circumstances that we usually pay most attention to. Compassion with, and this use of passion refers to suffering, as in, I guess, the passion of Christ. With the suffering of the other, as I think of it from the inside. So if we meet another with compassion, we meet another within the realm of our shared suffering, not from the inside out, as I think of it, not through the window of external characteristics. How are we doing? Not long ago, a friend raised with me a question about some people he had some dealings with who were harsh, dismissive, bossy, and unpleasant. He felt a need to confront that behavior, but wondered how it could be done. That's a place where the timing that we have mentioned several times becomes an issue. I think, is there a time when this person would be able to hear what I have to say? There may not be. We may not have that time. One possibility in such a situation, perhaps the most creative one, is to make an effort, extra effort of kindness toward those people or that person. Norm Fisher says we generally find ourselves responding sweetly and pleasantly to one who is sweet and pleasant with us. But actually, it is the one who is disposed to be sweet and pleasant who can best hear strong words without being bothered. And the one who is harsh and unpleasant with us, who may need to hear kind words. That's a pretty interesting realization, I think. Now, another illustration from the Buddha that I got fascinated with, thinking about what is he really saying? It's not obvious when you first read it. I hope I have the right paper here. That first list I read, the fairly lengthy one about the characteristics of the speech, this is what follows immediately. Venerable Sir, the Buddha is addressed, When learned nobles, learned Brahmins, learned householders, and learned monks, after formulating a question, then go to the Blessed One and pose it, has there already been in the Blessed One's mind the thought, if they come to me and ask me thus, I shall answer thus? Or does that answer occur to the Tathagata on the spot? As to that, Prince, I shall ask you a question in return. Answer it as you choose. What do you think, Prince? Are you skilled in the parts of a chariot? Yes, Venerable Sir, I am. What do you think, Prince? When people come to you and ask, what is the name of this part of the chariot? Has there already been in your mind the thought, if they come to me and ask me thus, I shall answer them thus? Or does that answer occur to you on the spot? Venerable Sir, I am well known as a charioteer, skilled in the parts of a chariot. All the parts of a chariot are well known to me. That answer would occur to me on the spot. So too, Prince, when learned nobles, learned Brahmins, learned householders, and learned monks, after formulating a question, then come to the Tathagata and pose it, the answer occurs to the Tathagata on the spot. Why is that? That element of things has been fully penetrated by the Tathagata. So why did I read that? What's that about? I think he's addressing the difference between a figuring out response, a calculated response, and a spontaneous response, a response from the inside out, a response from a relationship of shared understanding. A response that is not calculated. All those things that get into our answers. Am I going to sound like I know what I'm talking about? What's in this for me? Where is this going? The charioteer knows the chariot from the inside out. He or she does not take out his manuals and figure out what might have gone wrong. He knows what's up without calculation, because he is intimate with his chariot, with its every vibration. What happens to his chariot happens to him, and he responds on the spot. Moreover, he is secure enough in his chariot-driving life that he does not need to prove himself with answers that confirm his expertise. He is free to answer not from his figuring out, calculating mind, but on the spot, that is, I think, from his heart, with immediacy. Does that make sense? Does it sound like that might be what the Buddha is talking about? That's the significance I find in that language. No calculation and no what's in it for me, no hint of I hope I'll be noticed as a kind person. These shadows of self-centeredness usually prevent the intimacy, the awareness that would free us to respond to what arises directly out of our shared humanity, that is, on the spot. Katagiri Roshi referred to this kind of real communication as a process of communion and response. Communion is understanding, as I'm calling it, from the inside. And he would say that communion and response are one. Communion is real communication, a shared, a oneness, a sharing. And response is immediacy on the spot. Maybe that raises some questions or ideas from you. We have a little time. Who would like to make a comment or raise a question?
Ken?
Yes, Bob.
I really appreciate your talk today. You know, in this era of, fake news, alternative facts, embellishment of the situation, it's an everyday occurrence.
Yeah. I think you're right.
And we're just swamped with all this, I call it nonsense, but half the population believes it.
There may be more than that category that we believe that we don't, than we realize.
When you talk about chariot that knows his chariot, but here's a man that pretends that he knows his chariot.
Yes.
And he comes up there with all kinds of information there that just doesn't fit.
Thank you, Bob. I can tell your comments are heartfelt. Dana.
So I appreciate the calculating idea that, you know, that if you don't know what else to do, that you begin to calculate about how can I respond in a kind way. And so what is the alternative then? Is it to just act kindly until something comes up as a natural response? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't want to suggest, I don't want to make those categories too distinct.
Sometimes you do need to have just a heart-to-heart talk with somebody.
Yeah, when it comes to the thinking mind, or I've mentioned before, probably many times, Katagiri Roshi would say, you have to think. We need to use our minds. But don't think so much that you get a headache. So, yes, our thinking is part of it. I think it's where is the real anchor? What is our answer in that? And it takes a deeper searching within ourselves, a deeper knowledge of ourselves. We do spend a lot of time on the surface of things. And so I think it's pointing to our Zazen practice, all of our practice. We need to know ourselves and our own minds more deeply than we ordinarily do when we get lost in ordinary conversation. But that doesn't mean there isn't some straightforward, what we might even call calculation in our thinking that's necessary. Yoku.
Thank you for your talk. It's really helpful for me. And a couple of knotty problems come up. One, just relative to the question that Dana asked, which is, and speaks to this immediacy, the second part, the chariot part, of not thinking too much before we, you know, that balance between speaking spontaneously. And in my own experience, what I've begun to realize is the most important question is, where's my heart when I'm coming, when I'm going to speak? And the reason that's been a helpful question for me is because even when the words aren't right, the heart part is a kind of energy that even if I mess it up or I say something that it's hurtful, whether or thoughtless, it lets me convincingly respond with a request for, you know, to repair. So in other words, it helps me learn about that person and speech. And I think somehow the intent to connect is a communication that can be nonverbal or verbal. And so if I mess up the words, the most important thing is, was I coming from an intention to connect and then to do the repair at the right time? It might not be possible in the moment.
Thank you.
I do have a second question.
Sure.
And that was, I've been pondering President Trump and my response inside as well as outside. And I was struck by your comment about sometimes it's the person that speaks most irritatingly, unbeneficially, who most needs to be spoken to kindly. And I'm just wondering, I wonder when what the role of satirists in the public speech. I've been disturbed by how unkind the speech is coming toward President Trump.
Yeah.
And it really is a question for me is if I'm, you know, even a comedian who's, I think, in some ways trying to say something beneficial, but perhaps not in the right way or the right time. It's disagreeable. That's the best when it comes, I think, to my idea of comedy. But is even that problematic? You know?
Because comedy can easily become a mocking kind of tone.
Yes, and it has to do with, from what I know, for instance, of Mr. Trump, it's like I've really been thinking about if I'm trying to get inside his heart and mind and find the unity between us, what would be the best way to speak to him?
That's a hard one. Wow. Well, I appreciate your comments, and I have been thinking about that quite a bit myself and watching my own language and comments. And it's not real easy, but I can in my own mind simply content myself with thinking in some kind way about this man and his great effort and his convictions and have some sense of appreciation for the fact that there are reasons for him being just like he is, as there is for everybody, and having some sense of compassion for that. And that's about all I can do. And then try not to let some of the ongoing dialogue in the community poison my mind, lead to harshness. Leonard.
I had the wonderful opportunity to go and see I Am Not Your Negro. Thanks, Kim, for organizing that on Friday, the James Baldwin documentary, which I highly recommend. And afterwards, we went to a coffee shop, and someone who I just met, a friend of Kim's, who is African-American, told us a story about when she is 2015, and she was pulling into the parking lot in Cub Foods in West St. Paul, which isn't that far from my house, and she was kind of going down the parking lane, and this white man in a big truck kind of just pulled right in front of her, you know, quickly, and kind of stole the spot that she was, you know, she kind of had gotten there first, but he kind of zoomed in there. And so she parked not far away, and then she went and talked to, or she went to approach the guy and say, hey, you know, just something. And he said, shut up, N-word. And he walked into Cub Foods. And she followed him in. She was going to Cub Foods anyways. And the guy went and talked to one of the cashiers, and she started screaming, that man just called me a nigger. You know, that man just called me a nigger. Like, here we are, that, you know, we're in Minnesota, you know, and this guy just, you know, we're 2015, this guy, you know, and she just kept saying it over and over in this really loud voice. And, you know, and the guy was trying to ignore it, and everybody, it was just dead silent, right? And I was always parents and kids, and she's like, I know that all those people had to, all those moms and dads had to go home and have that conversation with those kids, you know, and I guess I don't, there's that power of, I don't know, speech is so powerful in a lot of different ways there, and I think the silence of people speaks volumes, and that's that Minnesota.
Indeed.
So like, oh, I don't want to engage with this. You know, I don't want to stick up for this woman. You know, nobody said anything. You know.
Mm-hmm. One of the most prominent, I think, in my life, kinds of wrong speech is not saying anything. That's a very interesting example. Wow. And she had some strength, and it changed things one way or another.
And I also think because of what has been going on, that today, I am quite certain there would have been more, of some kind of verbal of the community around her saying that. I believe that. I believe that this has brought that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's powerful. It's happening. Love and compassion is growing.
Thank you. I think our time is up.
Closing chant is on the front of your bulletin. May our intention